This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Blubber by Judy Blume. Read for you by Hallie Pfeiffer. Chapter 1. It's very foolish to laugh if you don't know what's funny in the first place. My best friend Tracy Wu says I'm really tough on people. She says she wonders sometimes how I can like her. But we both know that's a big joke. Tracy's the best friend I'll ever have. I just wish we were in the same fifth grade class. My teacher is Mrs. Minish. I'm not crazy about her. She hardly ever opens the windows in our room because she's afraid of getting a stiff neck. I never heard anything so dumb. Some days our room gets hot and stuffy and it smells, like this afternoon. We've been listening to individual reports on the mammal for almost an hour. Donna Davidson was standing at the front of the room reading hers. It was on the horse. Donna has this thing about horses. I tried hard not to fall asleep, but it wasn't easy. For a while, I watched Michael and Irwin as they passed National Geographic back and forth. It was open to a page full of naked people. Wendy and Caroline played tic-tac-toe behind Wendy's notebook. Wendy won 3 games in a row. I wasn't surprised. Wendy is a very clever person. Besides being class president, she is also group science leader, recess captain, and head of the Goldfish Committee. Did Mrs. Minish notice anything that was going on, or was she just concentrating on Donna's boring report? I couldn't tell from looking at her. She had a kind of half-smile on her face, and sometimes she kept her eyes closed for longer than a blink. To make the time go faster, I thought about Halloween. It's just 2 days away. I love to dress up and go trick-or-treating, but I'm definitely not going to be a dumb old witch again this year. Donna will probably be a horse. She dresses up like one every Halloween. Last year, she said when she grows up, she is going to marry a horse. She has him all picked out and everything. His name is San Salvador. Most of the time, Donna smells like a horse, but I wouldn't tell her that because she might think it's a compliment. I yawned and wiggled around in my chair. In closing, Donna said, I would like you to remember that even though some people say horses are stupid, that is a big lie. I personally happen to know some very smart horses, and that's the end of my report. The whole class clapped, not because Donna's report was great, but because it was finally over. Mrs. Minish opened her eyes and said, Very nice, Donna. Earlier, when I had finished my report on the lion, Mrs. Minish said the same thing to me. Very nice, Jill. Just like that. Now I couldn't be sure if she really meant it. My report wasn't as dull as Donna's, but it wasn't as long either. Maybe the longer you talk, the better grade you get. That wouldn't be fair, though. Either way, I'm glad Mrs. Minish calls on us alphabetically and that my last name is Brenner. I come right after Bruce Bonaventura. Mrs. Minish cleared her throat. Linda Fisher will give the last report for today, she said. We'll hear 5 more tomorrow, and by the middle of next week, everyone will have had a turn. I didn't think I'd be able to live through another report. Are you ready, Linda? Mrs. Minish asked. Yes, Linda said as she walked to the front of the room. My report is, on the whale. Caroline and Wendy started another game of tic-tac-toe while Bruce went to work on his nose. He has a very interesting way of picking it. First he works one nostril, and then the other, and whatever he gets out, he sticks on a piece of yellow paper inside his desk. The hand on the wall clock jumped. Only 10 minutes till the bell. I took a piece of paper out of my desk to keep a record of how many times Linda said, and, while she gave her report. So far I'd counted 7. Linda's head is shaped like a potato and sits right on her shoulders, as if she hasn't got any neck. She's also the pudgiest girl in our class, but not in our grade. Ruth Ellen Stark and Elizabeth Ryan are about 10 times fatter than Linda. But even they can't compare to Bruce. If we had a school fat contest, he would definitely win. He's a regular butterball. Blubber is a thick layer of fat that lies under the skin and over the muscles of whales, Linda said. And, it protects them and keeps them warm even in cold water. Blubber is very important. Removing the blubber from a whale is a job done by men called flensers. They peel off the blubber with long knives and, cut it into strips. Linda held up a picture. This is what blubber looks like, she said. Wendy passed a note to Caroline. Caroline read it, then turned around in her seat and passed it to me. I unfolded it. It said, Blubber is a good name for her. I smiled, not because I thought the note was funny, but because Wendy was watching me. When she turned away, I crumpled it up and left it in the corner of my desk. The next thing I knew, Robbie Winters, who sits next to me, reached out and grabbed it. Linda kept talking. And, whale oil is obtained by heating the blubber of the whale. European margarine companies are the chief users of whale oil, and, it also goes into glycerin and some laundry soaps and has other minor uses. Sometimes Eskimos and Japanese eat blubber. When Linda said that, Wendy laughed out loud, and once she started, she couldn't stop. Probably the reason she got the hiccups was she laughed too hard. They were very loud hiccups, the kind that you can't do anything about. Pretty soon Robbie Winters was laughing too. He doesn't laugh like an ordinary person. That is, no noise comes out. But his whole body shakes and tears run out of his eyes, and just watching him is enough to make anybody start in. So the next minute we were all roaring, all except Linda and Mrs. Minnish. She clapped her hands and said, Exactly what is going on here? Wendy let out a loud hiccup. Mrs. Minnish said, Wendy, you are excused. Go and get a drink of water. Wendy stood up and ran out of the room. By then, Wendy's note about blubber had traveled halfway around the class, and I couldn't stop laughing, even when Mrs. Minnish looked right at me and said, Jill Brenner, will you please explain the joke? I didn't say anything. Well, Jill, I'm waiting. I don't know the joke, I finally said, finding it hard to talk at all. You don't know why you're laughing? Mrs. Minnish asked. I shook my head. It's very foolish to laugh if you don't know what's funny in the first place. I nodded. If you can't control yourself, you can march straight to Mr. Nichols's office and explain the situation to him. I nodded again. I'm waiting for your answer, Jill. I forgot the question, Mrs. Minnish. The question is, can you control yourself? Oh, yes, Mrs. Minnish, I can. I hope so. Linda, you may continue, Mrs. Minnish said. I'm done, Linda told her. Well, that was a very nice report. The bell rang then. We pushed back our chairs and ran for the row of lockers behind our desks. Mrs. Minnish has to dismiss us at exactly 2:35, otherwise we'd miss our buses. It's very important to get on the right one. On the first day of school, my brother, Kenny, got on the wrong bus and wound up all the way across town. Since my mother and father were both at work, the principal of Long Meadow School had to drive Kenny home. I would never make such a mistake. My bus is H4. That means Hillside School, route number 4. I'm glad Kenny doesn't go to my school. Next year he will, but right now he is just in 4th grade, and only 5th and 6th graders go to Hillside. When I got on the bus, Tracy was saving me a seat. Caroline and Wendy found 2 seats across from us. Before this year, I'd never been in either one of their classes, but this is my second time with Linda Fisher, and I've been with Donna, Bruce, and Robbie since kindergarten. We had the best afternoon, Tracy said. Mr. Vandenberg invented this game to help us get our multiplication facts straight, and I was 48, and every time he called out 6 times 8, or 4 times 12, I had to jump up and yell, Here! It was so much fun. You're lucky to be in his class, I said. I wish he'd give Mrs. Minnish some ideas. She's the wrong type. You're telling me. As Linda climbed onto the bus, Wendy shouted, "Here comes Blubber." And a bunch of kids called out, "Hi, Blubber." Our bus pulled out of the driveway, and as soon as we turned the corner and got going, Robbie Winter sailed a paper airplane down the aisle. It landed on my head. "Pass it here, Jill," Wendy called. When I did, she whipped out a magic marker and wrote, "I'm Blubber, fly me," on the wing. Then she stood up and aimed the plane at Linda. The group of girls who always sit in the last row of seats started singing to the tune of Beautiful Dreamer. "Blubbery blubber, blub 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 blub." At the same time, the airplane landed on 2 sixth-grade boys who ripped it up to make spitballs. They shot them at Linda. Then Irwin grabbed her jacket off her lap. "She won't need a coat this winter," he said. "She's got her blubber to keep her warm." He tossed the jacket up front, and we played keep away with it. "Some people even eat blubber," Caroline shrieked, catching Linda's jacket. "She said so herself." "Ooh, disgusting," Ruth Ellen Stark moaned, clutching her stomach. "Sick." The girls in the back started their song again. "Blubbery blubber, blah 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 blah." The bus driver yelled, "Shut up or I'll put you all off." Nobody paid any attention. Linda picked the spitballs out of her hair, but she still didn't say anything. She just sat there, looking out the window. When we reached the first stop, Wendy threw Linda's jacket to me. She and Caroline ran down the aisle, and as Linda stood up, Wendy called back, "Bye, Blubber!" Linda stopped at my row. I could tell she was close to crying because last year, when Robbie stepped on her finger by mistake, she got the same look on her face, right before the tears started rolling. "Oh, here," I said, and I tossed her the jacket. She got off, and I saw her race down the street, away from Wendy and Caroline. They were still laughing. Chapter 2. That's what you're going to be for Halloween? Linda lives in Hidden Valley. So do Wendy, Caroline, Robbie, and a bunch of other kids. It's a big group of houses with a low brick wall around it and a sign that says, "Welcome to Hidden Valley. Speed limit 25 miles per hour." Across the street, there is another sign saying, "Watch our children." It's called Hidden Valley because there are a million trees, and in the summer you can't see any of the houses. Nobody told me this. It's something I figured out by myself. My stop is next. Me and Tracy are the only ones who get off there. The Wu family lives across the road from us. They have a lot of animals. All of this doesn't mean we live in the country. It's kind of pretend country. That is, it looks like country because of all the woods, but just about everyone who lives here works in the city, like my mother and father. I don't know one single farmer, unless you count the woman who sells us vegetables in the summer. "Can you come over?" Tracy asked as we collected the mail from our mailboxes. "As soon as I change," I told her. "Bring your stamps," Tracy said. "I will." Me and Tracy are practically professional stamp collectors. We both have the Master Global album, and I have this deal going with my father. If I let my nails grow between now and Christmas, he will give me $25 to spend in Gimbel's, which has the best stamp department in the whole world. So even though it is just about killing me, I'm not going to bite my nails. Sometimes I have to sit on my fingers to keep from doing it. When I got home, Kenny was waiting at the front door. He was holding his Guinness Book of World Records in one hand, and with the other was shoving a cupcake into his mouth. "Did you know the oldest woman to ever give birth to a baby was 57 years old?" As he talked, he blew crumbs out of his mouth. "So?" I said, to show I wasn't interested, because if Kenny gets the idea I'm interested, he will tell me facts from his Book of World Records all day. "So, that means Grandma's too old to have a baby." "Well, of course she is. She's past 60. "And Mrs. Sandmeyer's too old, too." Mrs. Sandmeyer is our housekeeper. She takes care of me and Kenny after school. "Too old for what?" she asked as we walked into the kitchen. "Too old to have a baby," Kenny said. Mrs. Sandmeyer laughed. "Who says so?" "My Book of World Records," Kenny told her. The oldest woman to give birth was 57, and you're 58.
Don't remind me, Mrs. Sandmeyer said.
Mrs. Sandmeyer is always telling us she's getting old, but she can still take on Kenny and his friends at basketball and beat them single-handed.
How was your day, Jill? Mrs. Sandmeyer asked me in French as she poured a glass of milk. I answered in English. Pretty good.
Mrs. Sandmeyer made a face. Part of her job is to teach me and Kenny to speak French. She's from Switzerland and can speak three languages. I understand what she says when she speaks French, but I always answer in English because most of the time I'm too busy to think of the right words in French. After my snack, I changed into my favorite jeans, collected my stamp equipment, and headed for Tracy's. Kenny and Mrs. Sandmeyer were already outside, practicing layups.
Be back at 5:30, Mrs. Sandmeyer called as I walked up the driveway.
I will.
Our street isn't big enough to have a name. There's just a sign saying Private Road, and our house and Tracy's. Dr. Wu was outside planting tulip bulbs. Tuesday is his day off.
Hi, Dr. Wu, I said. He is our family doctor and makes house calls only to us. I like him a lot. He's always smiling. Also, he doesn't gag me with a stick when he looks down my throat.
Hi yourself, he called to me.
Tracy was in the backyard feeding her chickens. She has 10 of them and a beautiful white rooster called Friendly, who I love. Sometimes Tracy lets me hold him. His crown is red and it feels like a cat's tongue. I know this because last year one of Tracy's cats licked me. She has 7 cats, but they don't live in the house. They come into the garage to get food and water, and the rest of the time they stay outside. Tracy also has 2 dogs. They live in the house. When the chickens were fed, we went inside to Tracy's room to look over our latest approvals from the Winthrop Stamp Company. We decided we'd each buy 2 stamps. Tracy showed me the Halloween costume her mother is making for her. Big Bird from Sesame Street. It has yellow feathers and everything.
It's beautiful, I said. I still didn't have an idea for my costume.
We went to work on our albums, trading doubles and fastening loose stamps to the page. And then, right in the middle of licking a stamp hinge, I thought up a costume so clever I didn't even tell Tracy. I decided it would be a surprise. That night, when my mother and father got home, they brought 2 big pumpkins with them. I waited until we were halfway through with dinner before I brought up the subject of my Halloween costume.
I don't think I want to be a witch this year, I said. I hoped I wouldn't hurt Mom's feelings because the witch's costume was hers when she was a kid. It has funny, pointy-toed shoes with silver buckles, a high black silk hat, and a long black robe with a bow at the neck. The whole thing smells like mothballs. Besides, the shoes hurt my feet.
You can be whatever you want, my mother said, and she didn't sound insulted.
If she doesn't want to wear the witch's suit, can I? Kenny asked.
A boy witch? I said.
Sure, what's wrong with that?
Nothing, Mom told him. I'd love to have you wear my costume.
And I'm going to carry a broom, Kenny said. And remember that fake cigar from my last year's disguise? I'm going to use that, too. I'll bet there aren't many witches around who smoke cigars.
Smoking is dangerous to your health, I said.
My cigar is fake, stupid.
I gave him a kick under the table and was pleased to see that Mom ground out the cigarette she'd been smoking.
What about you, Jill? My father asked. What do you want to be?
Oh, I've been thinking I might like to be a flenser.
What's that? Kenny asked.
You mean you don't know? I said.
Never heard of it.
With all your facts in the Book of World Records, you never learned about the oldest flenser and the youngest flenser and the flenser who did the best job and all that?
Dad, Kenny said, she's starting in again.
I absolutely love to tease Kenny.
Jill, that's enough, my father said. Tell Kenny what a flenser is.
Yes, Mom said. I can hardly wait to hear myself.
You mean you don't know either? I asked my mother.
Never heard the word. Did you, Gordon?
Nope, Dad said.
Kenny jumped up. I'll be right back,
he told us as he ran out of the room. I knew where he was going, to look up Flenser in his dictionary. In a few minutes he was back, carrying it. A Flenser strips the blubber off whales, he read, looking at me. That's what you're going to be for Halloween? He asked, like he couldn't believe it. I smiled. Where did you get that idea, Jill? Mom asked. From this girl in my class. She gave a report on whales. Well, that's certainly original, Dad said. What kind of costume does a Flenser wear? Kenny asked. A Flenser suit, I told him. Yeah, but what's it made of? Oh, jeans and a shirt and a special kind of hat and a long knife. No knife, my father said. That's too dangerous. Not a real knife, I said. One made out of cardboard. What kind of hat? Kenny asked. A Flenser hat, naturally, I told him. Yeah, but what's it look like? I can't begin to describe it. You'll just have to wait and see. I'd wear boots if I was a Flenser, Kenny said. What for? I asked him. Because of walking around and all that yucky blubber stuff. Kenny was right. I'd have to wear boots, too. After dinner, we went into the living room for our family poker game. I handed out the Monopoly money. We each get $150 from the bank. My father shuffled the cards, Mom cut them, and Kenny dealt. I got a pair of kings and three junk cards. I'm careful not to give my hand away by the expression on my face. You can always tell what Kenny is holding. If it's something good, he makes all kinds of noises and he laughs a lot. Even if he doesn't have anything good, he stays in and takes three new cards. He never drops out when he should because he can't stand not betting against the rest of us. When it comes to bluffing, my father is the best. Every time he stays in and starts raising, I think he has three aces, and unless I have something really great, I drop out. Then I'll find out Dad didn't even have a pair. My mother is not an experienced poker player. She can never remember which is higher, a flush or a straight. Sometimes I have to help her out. Later, when me and Kenny were in our pajamas and ready for bed, my father said we could carve our pumpkins. Mom had to go to her room because the smell of pumpkin guts makes her sick to her stomach. Last year, when I cut out my pumpkin's face, it was all lopsided, but this time I got both eyes even and the nose in between. Dad made the teeth for me. Kenny wouldn't let anyone touch his pumpkin, which is why it turned out looking like it had three eyes and no teeth. Chapter 3. And now for the most original costume of the day. The next night, I turned my mother's old beach hat into part of my Flenser suit. Mom didn't mind because she'd worn the hat for 4 years and was getting tired of it. My mother never sets foot on the beach without wearing a floppy hat. She thinks it's very bad to get sun on her face. She's always saying that sun makes wrinkles and wrinkles make people look older and that someday I will know what she means. My father doesn't worry about wrinkles, so he never has to wear anything on his head. I'll be like him when I grow up. How can you dive under the waves with a floppy hat on your head? I look much older in the beach hat. I could pass for 12, I think, maybe even 13 with sunglasses. The beach hat is so big, it covers most of my face. It used to be lots of different colors, but now it's faded into a kind of bluish gray. I tried to find pictures of whales to decorate the hat, but I couldn't, so I settled for some of dolphins instead. I cut them out and stapled them all over the brim. Then I cut a piece of black construction paper into thin strips and attached them, too. They hung down the sides, kind of like hair. I shaped my Flenser knife like a sword, but with a big curl at one end. I covered it with gold sparkle and painted my boots to match. Then I tried on my whole costume. I went to my mother's room to have a look in her long mirror, but Kenny was already there, admiring himself in the witch's suit. He had on his yellow goggles and the fake cigar dangled out of the corner of his mouth. He was doing some strange dance, but as soon as he saw me, he stopped. "I just wanted to see if it fit okay," he said. He walked away from the mirror, tripping over the pointy witch's shoes. "It's hard to walk in these things," he told me, kicking them off. "Can I ask you a very simple question?" I said. "Go ahead." Why are you wearing your goggles?
If you have to ask, you wouldn't understand, Kenny told me.
But speaking of goggles, did you know that the first motorcycle race was in France in 1897?
No, I didn't, but thanks for telling me.
Kenny looked me up and down.
Is that what you're wearing tomorrow?
Yes, it's my Flenser suit. I stood in front of the mirror and held the sword out.
What'd you do to your boots?
Painted them.
Gold?
Why not?
Does Mom know?
They're my boots, Kenny. Why should Mom care if I had to paint them to match my sword?
Speaking of swords, Kenny began.
We were not speaking of swords, I told him. We were speaking about my Flenser suit.
Yeah, well, if I were you, I'd wear a sign telling people what you are, because I don't think anybody's going to know otherwise.
Oh, Kenny, you are so dumb. Of course they'll know. Just look at my hat. Can't you see all the pictures of whales up there?
They're dolphins, Kenny said.
Only you would know that.
And speaking of dolphins, Kenny said,
never mind, never mind. I don't want to hear it.
Later, I made a sign saying Flenser, just in case Kenny was right. I punched two holes through it, ran a string across, and hung it around my neck.
The next morning, my mother was surprised when she saw my boots. They're gold, Mom said in a very loud voice. She puffed hard on her cigarette.
Smoking causes cancer and heart disease, I told her, ignoring my boots.
Mom mashed her cigarette out and reached for her coffee.
What did you do to your new boots, Jill?
I painted them.
Jill, they have to last you all winter. You haven't even worn them yet.
I know it, Mother.
Well, how could you do such a thing?
A Flenser wouldn't wear plain brown boots.
I just hope you used washable paint.
I think I did.
You checked first, didn't you?
I'm almost sure it's washable.
You didn't check before you used it?
Not exactly. Mom lit another cigarette. I called for Tracy. She was in her Big Bird costume, and her mother was adjusting a crown of feathers on her head.
How do you like it?
She asked, twirling around.
Oh, Tracy, you look fantastic!
Next to her, I felt very plain. Tracy looked me over.
What's a Flenser?
She asked, reading my sign.
That's what I'm supposed to be, I told her.
I know, but what is one?
Oh, a Flenser's a guy who strips the blubber off whales.
Where'd you get such a weird idea? Tracy asked.
From Linda Fisher, you know, the one Wendy calls blubber. She gave a report on whales.
Well, Tracy said, at least you don't have to worry that everyone will be dressed like you.
She went to the mirror and combed her hair.
She has the nicest hair I've ever seen. It hangs straight down her back. She can even sit on it, and it never looks dirty or has tangles. I'm growing mine, but no matter how long it gets, it will never look like Tracy's.
Mrs. Wu drove us to school so Tracy wouldn't mess up her costume. When I got to my class, Wendy was already there. She was dressed like a queen. She wore a very high crown with lots of fake emeralds and rubies pasted to it. She also wore her mother's long bathrobe and had this crazy-looking fur thing wrapped around her neck. It had eyes, paws, a tail, and everything.
Animals are for loving, not wearing, I told her.
I know it, Wendy said.
But this thing is very old. It belonged to my grandmother, and in those days they didn't know about ecology.
Oh, I said. Then I guess it's all right.
Donna Davidson really fooled me. Instead of dressing up like a horse, this year she was a jockey.
My things are all genuine, she bragged.
My father knows this jockey who's very famous, and he's just my size, and these are his real-life jockey clothes.
Donna looked pretty good, but I didn't tell her I thought so. And I wasn't worried about winning the prize for most original costume, because a Flenser is a lot more clever than a jockey or a queen with a tall crown. Practically everyone else in our class was dressed like a bum, with old baggy pants and shirts hanging out and charcoal smudges on their faces.
Caroline even carried a stick with a pouch tied on one end. There is nothing very original about dressing up like that. Right after Mrs. Minish took the attendance, she told us to line up for the Halloween assembly. Remember, no talking in the halls or the auditorium. I stood on line between Wendy and Linda, who was wearing a long red cape. As we walked down the hall, Linda tapped me and said, "What are you supposed to be?" "Can't you read?" I asked, holding up my sign. "Oh, a Flenser. I'll bet you got that idea from my report." "What makes you think so?" "Jill Brenner," Mrs. Minish snapped. "I said no talking." In the auditorium, our class sat in the third and fourth rows. I whispered to Linda, "What are you supposed to be?"
"Never mind."
"Don't you know?"
"I know."
"Then tell me."
"No, it's my own business."
"I'll bet you're supposed to be Little Red Riding Hood."
"I am not."
I turned to Wendy. "Get a load of Little Red Riding Hood," I said. Wendy leaned across me and told Linda, "You better watch out for the big bad wolf."
"Yeah," I said, "you better."
I felt a hand on my head. I turned around in my seat. It was Mrs. Minish.
"If I have to speak to you again, you'll go back to the classroom."
I didn't say a word during the Pledge of Allegiance or the Star-Spangled Banner. Linda sang in a very loud voice, and when I looked at her, I could see her gray tooth. Wendy says if she isn't more careful about the way she brushes, all her teeth will turn gray and rotten and fall out. The Halloween parade was next. Every class had a turn to march across the stage. The costume judges all sat in the first row. They were mothers from the PTA. It's against the rules for them to vote for their own kids. I watched carefully as the other classes had their turns. I pretended to be a judge. Only 2 sixth graders were dressed as anything besides bums. Jerry Pochuck was a doctor, and Fred Yarmouth was something I couldn't figure out. I certainly didn't see any costumes as original as mine, or any that were prettier than Tracy's. After the parade, Mrs. Runyon, the librarian, stood on the stage and said, "I'm happy to be here today to present the prizes for the most beautiful and the most original costumes." I sat on my hands to keep from chewing my nails. "But before I do, I want to share with you the fine prizes the PTA has selected and donated." Mrs. Runyon held up 2 paperback books. They both had medals printed on the covers. I read them last year. One wasn't too bad, but the other was so boring I never got past the first chapter. Still, it wasn't the prize that mattered. It was the idea of winning. "And now for our winner," Mrs. Runyon said. "For the most beautiful costume, Tracy Wu, the Big Bird." Everyone clapped as Tracy ran to the stage, dripping yellow feathers all over the aisle. She got the boring book. "And now for the most original costume of the day." I sat up in my seat. "To Fred Yarmouth, the fried egg," Mrs. Runyon called. I couldn't believe it. I was so sure the prize would be mine. And how did the judges know Fred was supposed to be a fried egg when I had no idea what he was? Fred ran to the stage. Mrs. Runyon said, "Tell us, Fred, how did you decide to be a fried egg?" "Oh, I don't know," Fred said. "I had this white sheet and some yellow felt, and when I put it all together, that's what it looked like to me." He hadn't even planned to be an egg. That made everything worse. Now I'd be stuck wearing gold boots for the rest of the year, and all for nothing. Chapter 4. What's the Magic Word? We were back in our classroom at 10:30, and Mrs. Minish said we'd work on math and science until lunchtime. I tried to concentrate on my math, but when Mrs. Minish asked to see my paper, she drew red lines across every problem. "They're all wrong?" I asked. "Not the answers," Mrs. Minish said.
"Then what?"
"You didn't set up the problems properly."
"But if I got the right answers, what's the difference?"
"Your equations are backwards. You'll have to do the paper over."
"I don't see why," I told her.
because you're supposed to be learning how to think the problems through, and you aren't thinking the right way.
Isn't there more than one way to think?
Really, Jill, I don't care for this talking back.
But Mrs. Minish,
no buts, Mrs. Minish said. Take it home and do it over.
Before lunch, Mrs. Minish excused us to go to the girls' and boys' rooms. I took my sword with me. I was afraid if I left it at my desk, Robbie Winters might get his hands on it and ruin it. And I needed it for later to go trick-or-treating for UNICEF.
Mrs. Minish is such a bitch, I said to Wendy and Caroline as we stood by the sinks in the girls' room. She marked all my math problems wrong.
I got 100, Caroline said.
That's because I let you copy off me, Wendy told her.
Not that my morning wasn't already ruined, I said. I still can't believe they gave that smelly fried egg costume the prize.
Yeah, Wendy said. My costume was much more original than that.
Caroline said, Personally, I thought Donna Davidson would win. Her things were all genuine.
There's nothing original about being a jockey, I said.
Being a flenser is original, but those judges were too dumb to know it.
One of them was my aunt, Caroline said.
Oh, I didn't mean to insult her.
That's all right, she is dumb. My mother's always saying so.
Oh.
The other girls finished and went back to the classroom, while me, Caroline, and Wendy stood around talking. I heard a toilet flush, then Linda Fisher came out of a booth, pulling her red cape around her.
Look who's here, Wendy said.
It's Blubber.
In the flesh, Caroline added.
I wonder what's under her cape, Wendy asked.
Probably nothing, Caroline said.
Oh, there's got to be something, Wendy said.
There's got to be her blubber, at least.
Yeah, her blubber's under her cape, Caroline said,
and she and Wendy started laughing. I giggled a little, too.
Wendy moved closer to Linda, humming Beautiful Dreamer.
Stay away from me, Linda told her, walking backwards.
I'm not going to hurt you, stupid, Wendy said.
I just want to see what's under your cape.
Don't touch me.
Oh, don't worry, that's not my job. Jill's the flenser.
That's true, I said. I am.
And the flenser's the one who strips the blubber, Wendy said.
I wasn't sure exactly what Wendy had in mind.
Linda tried to run, but Caroline and Wendy blocked her way.
Strip her, flenser, Wendy called. Now.
Then we'll throw her cape out the window and she'll have to walk down the hall in her blubbery birthday suit.
No, Linda said. Don't you dare strip me.
Caroline and Wendy grabbed hold of Linda's arms and held her still.
Do your job, Wendy said. Prove what a good flenser you are.
Okay, I said, pulling off Linda's cape.
She had on a regular skirt and shirt under it.
Strip her some more, Wendy said, yanking up Linda's skirt. Hey, Blubber wears flowered underpants.
Let go of me!
Linda squirmed and tried to kick, but Caroline grabbed her shirt and tugged until two buttons popped off.
She wears an undershirt, Caroline said.
Linda started to cry.
Oh my, Blubber's blubbering, Wendy said.
Stop it! Stop it! Linda cried.
What's the magic word? I asked.
Please!
Linda's nose was running.
Blubber knows the magic word, I said, so the flenser won't strip her today.
But she still has to obey the queen, Wendy said.
I am Her Majesty, Queen Wendy. Get it, Blubber?
Linda nodded and tried to catch her breath. She had red splotches all over her face.
Curtsy to the queen, Wendy said.
Linda tried to tuck her shirt back into her skirt.
Didn't you hear me, Blubber? I said curtsy to the queen.
Linda curtsied to Wendy.
That's better, Wendy said. Now kiss my foot.
I don't want to.
Linda started sniffling. I raised my sword.
Do whatever Queen Wendy says, Blubber.
Linda bent down and kissed Wendy's sneaker.
Now cut out that stupid crying, Wendy told her as she threw Linda her cape.
Here, put this on, and remember, one word to anyone about this and we'll really get you next time.
Wendy looked at me and smiled. I wasn't worried about Linda telling on us. Besides, everybody knows you don't cross Wendy.
Chapter 5. A Person Gets What She Deserves.
I won the prize for most original costume in my school, Kenny said. He was still in his witch's suit, standing at the front door when I got home.
I don't believe you.
Kenny held up an envelope. See for yourself. He handed it to me. I opened the envelope and pulled out a piece of stiff red paper. It said, One free meal at Opie's, awarded by the PTA of Longmeadow School for the most original Halloween costume. Under that, Kenny Brenner was printed in blue ink.
You see, Kenny said, I told you I won.
Opie's has rat tails in their food.
Just in the chicken, Kenny said. The hamburgers are okay.
I wouldn't eat there if it was the last place on earth.
You don't have to, Kenny said.
At my school, they at least gave away paperback books.
Did you get one?
I already read them both, I told him.
But did you get one?
They gave it to Fred Yarmouth just because he's in sixth grade.
Kenny smiled and went tripping down the hall to his room. I kicked the front door shut and went to the kitchen.
I don't understand it, I told Mrs. Sandmeyer. I wore that witch's suit 3 years in a row and I never won anything.
Mrs. Sandmeyer offered me a plate of ginger snaps. It was the cigar that did it, she said. That and the yellow goggles. He was an unusual witch.
Next year he'll probably be an unusual flenser and win again.
Probably, Mrs. Sandmeyer said.
Humph.
I took 3 ginger snaps and went to my room. I opened my closet and took out my special suitcase. I keep my stamp collection in it. Grandma gave me the suitcase last year, before she moved to her apartment. She kept it in her basement for 15 years, ever since Grandpa died. All that time, she was just waiting to find someone who would really appreciate it. She chose me because she knew I would take good care of it, and I do. I polish it with a special leather cream once a week. I turned the pages of my Master Global album, admiring all my stamps. The ones from Nagaland are my favorites. Tracy called at 5. What time will you be ready to go trick-or-treating? I swallowed the meatball I'd been chewing and said, As soon as my parents get home, I'm eating now.
Don't forget your pillowcase.
I won't. I cut out eyes and everything.
Good, because if Mr. Machinist takes pictures this year, I don't want him getting me.
Me neither.
I'll meet you outside at 6:30.
Okay.
And bring a flashlight.
Right. Bye.
Mr. Machinist lives in Hidden Valley, and every Halloween he hides in his bushes, snapping pictures of kids on his property. Last year he caught some boys soaping up his car windows, and besides taking his picture, which he sent to the police, he also turned the hose on him. Mr. Machinist has no sense of humor. After supper, I packed a shopping bag with a flashlight, a can of pink silly string, a roll of toilet paper, and my UNICEF collection box. In my free hand, I carried my Flenser sword. When my parents got home, my mother said, It's freezing out. You can't go like that.
But if I wear a jacket, no one will be able to see my Flenser suit.
Not only do you have to wear a jacket, Mom said, but it has to be a heavy one, zipped up.
Oh, Mom, you do this to me every Halloween.
I'm sorry, Jill, it's the weather, not me. Halloween should be in August. Then you wouldn't have to wear anything.
Ha ha, I said, pulling the pillowcase over my head.
I put my Flenser hat on top of that.
Are you sure you can see? Dad asked me.
Hold up your fingers and I'll tell you how many, I said.
My father held up 2.
I said, 6, right?
Then I laughed. So did Dad.
Gordon, I'm afraid she's going to suffocate in that get-up, my mother said.
Can you breathe? Dad asked.
Yes, I can see and I can breathe, and Tracy's waiting for me, so can I please go now?
Have fun, my mother said. But remember, if you're not home by 8:30, I'm sending your father to find you.
I'll be home, I promise.
I walked to the front hall and grabbed my heavy jacket from the closet. Kenny was standing at the door, waiting for trick-or-treaters. He never goes out on Halloween night. He says it's because he likes to answer the doorbell, handing out the candy and UNICEF money, but I know the truth. Kenny is chicken. He's scared of the dark. He really believes in witches and goblins and monsters. That's why he sleeps with his closet light on every night. I took 3 nickels from the bowl on the hall table.
Hey, Kenny said, that's UNICEF money.
I know it. I dropped the nickels into my collection box.
Bye, chicken. Watch out for the wolf man. He just loves Halloween.
I snorted and jumped away as Kenny tried to slug me. It was a very dark night. There was no moon and there aren't any streetlights in our neighborhood.
I think we should head straight for Hidden Valley, Tracy said. There aren't enough houses to bother with around here.
Agreed. We took turns holding the flashlight. Mrs. Wu had made Tracy wear a heavy jacket, too. All you could see of her Big Bird suit was a bunch of yellow feathers hanging out. She had her pillowcase over her head, same as me, but she had taped a few feathers to the top, sort of like an Indian headdress. When we got to Hidden Valley, it was easier to see, because most families there have lampposts down by the road.
You brought the eggs, didn't you? I asked Tracy.
Yes, 6 of them.
Do they smell bad?
I don't know. When we crack them, we'll find out. They should be rotten by now. I've had them in my dresser drawer for a month.
Good.